We'll talk more about that baseball trade and why it's not good for baseball as a whole coming up in about 15 minutes. But a baseball/football conversation to be had involving Heisman Trophy candidate Kyler Murray.
Let's play a little What Would You Do? You remember that show by John Quinones on ABC?
So, you'll remember Kyler Murray drafted first round by the Oakland A's. $4.66 million deal. They all agreed, you go play football for a season in Oklahoma.
Sure.
But you're coming then back to baseball. Right. His agent is Scott Boras.
Right.
Big time baseball guy.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Doesn't mess around.
Right.
Like, deal maker. Right. You got Boras. He's not negotiating a contract for you in the NFL.
Right.
He's doing it for baseball.
That's
right.
Right.
So Kyler Murray.
Are there any guys that cross over sports and agents anymore? I don't think there are.
I don't know what the legalities are if you can negotiate with.
You know, Boras is baseball. Leagues. You know, the guy, yells and screams is a football agent. What's his
Rosenhaus?
Name?
Rosenhaus?
Yeah, Rosenhaus, a football guy. You know, Lee Steinberg's a football guy.
I don't know if you have to be certified by each league and nobody does that. It's too much to do. I don't know. So Kyler Murray comes to Oklahoma, right, with baseball contract in hand. Pretty good spot to be in. Got a deal. Going to play a little football. I don't think we realize how good the kid is. He's good. And he's seeing him in person, he is fast.
You saw him in person, right? What was that like?
He can scoot.
Yeah.
And now the I don't want to call it the new NFL, but.
But it is.
He could work just fine in an NFL system. He throws the ball well. He runs really, really well. He can do a lot of things. And I'm like, dude, don't close the door on football just yet. I know you got a baseball thing that you're like committed to. I'm Kyler Murray, the what if game. I'm going to the NFL draft.
Well,
I'm going to try to play both.
I was listening to Kuiper and McShay kind of discuss this guy this morning, and McShay thinks he's a first-round talent. Kuiper thinks he's a second-round guy because of his height. I tend to think Mel Kuiper is still living in the dinosaur age of the NFL draft. I think the NFL draft has passed Mel Kuiper by.
He's a second-round draft pick if you allow yourself to get caught up.
To get caught up in the stuff that doesn't matter anymore in the NFL. Yeah. Height of a guy. Yeah. Tyree Kill's 5'8". Okay, it doesn't matter.
Watch Kyler Murray play. He's good.
He's really, really good. And he sat down in a great interview with Tim Tebow, and I hate to say that, it's a great interview, because we say that about a lot of things that really aren't. But this was pretty cool that Tim Tebow, Heisman Trophy winner, sitting down with a Heisman Trophy candidate and Kyler Murray, one of the finalists for the Heisman Trophy, just kind of talking.
One guy who's playing baseball.
One guy who played baseball, football, another guy. I mean, it was really good job, ESPN, of pairing Tim Tebow with him. And they had a really good exchange back and forth for 3 minutes. And I would recommend the entire interview to everybody to check it out. And we're going to play a little bit of it for you here, because I was just like, wow, this is really, really good. And Kyler Murray talked about, you know, where he is right now as a football player, and the reason he got so good at football is because of baseball.
I love both games. They both teach me two different lessons. Failure shaped me to be, you know, in the grand scheme of things, I think it has shaped me to be, you know, the patient guy, the guy that understands you're going to fail at times, you know, not taking it hard, learning how to deal with failure. I mean, you know as well as I do, you're going to fail. And that's the,
at
the
end of the day,
exactly. At the end of the day, you know, baseball makes you want to quit sometimes. Football, you can get angry and go do something about it.
Yeah, you can go do something about it. You know, you get angry out there, you go make a play. But he thought from playing baseball and failing 70% of the time to be a great baseball player, that, you know, is a lot of failure to deal with. And if you can deal with that kind of failure in baseball, heck, in the NFL, you're not going to experience. And football, you're not going to experience. Yeah. In football, you get the next play. In baseball, you get 3 innings to wait before you get the next opportunity to go out there and hit a baseball again and get another opportunity for an at-bat. So he realizes using the how you deal with failure in baseball has helped him take it to that next level in the National Football League. And I think we're seeing kind of a little bit of a combination here between, you know, Kyler Murray and Patrick Mahomes, because I think part of the reason why Mahomes is very successful at football is because he just doesn't have he gives no F's. I mean, like, if he makes a mistake or something bad happens, you move on and you're on to the next play, and that comes from the baseball background. I think having that baseball background and dealing with failure and understanding that failure isn't something that you have to carry with you onto the next play and the next at-bat, if you can get past that and deal with failure, you can be successful in a lot of other sports, and that's what Kyler Murray is doing right now. But Josh, he's got a big decision to
make. What would you do?
What would I do? I'd take the money in baseball. I mean, I understand you could probably cash in sooner in the NFL because of the way it works.
And play.
And play in the NFL. Right. He's going to have to deal with the minor leagues, but he does have $4.66 million in his pocket right now. The long-term money in baseball and length of career favors baseball more than it does playing in the NFL. And I think it would be very difficult for him to be a two-sport star, because when Deion and Bo were two sports stars, Bo was a running back, Deion was a defensive back. Kyler Murray's a quarterback. You're going to have to really be committed to football to go out there and be a football player if you're at that quarterback position. A running back can come in and play. A cornerback can come in and play. But a quarterback has to be that leader of the organization and has to be able to go there every single day. So I don't think being a two-sport star is an option for him because he is a quarterback. And Tim Tebow asked him, well, how are you going to choose, bro?
I think that's something, you know, me and my family will talk about at the end of the season and weigh out the options of what the NFL thinks of me. Right now, my future is kind of already planned out, but we'll see what happens.
So it's kind of already planned out. He was 100% baseball going into this football season and realized all the success that he had.
Might be fun.
And now he's like, oh boy, what do I do in this situation? Of course, Boris fired back yesterday. He's playing baseball. It's already a done deal. But it sounds like Kyler Murray's got some doubts right now whether or not baseball is the route that he wants to take.
Now, if he were a first-round selection, he'd make more than that 4.66 just from a signing bonus.
Correct. But if he's not, then
you might be a little difference of dollars.
Right.
In terms of guaranteed signing bonus type money.
Right.
But I think he's talented enough to play in the NFL.
I think he is.
I think he'd do it right away, and he's gone. If the money is what you're worried about, and I don't think he is, I don't think it's necessarily about, but, you know, you're playing the dollars, he'll be just fine at football.
Yeah.
And then I would dabble in baseball.
But
baseball's done it forever.
But not with a quarterback.
They've done those types of things. Now, a lot of times it's the quarterback that has failed. The quarterback, yes, fails.
The goes back and like the Brandon Whedon's of the
goes
world.
Back and plays baseball or vice versa. We've had some of that. Right. Henson, whatever.
Yep.
We've had a bunch of those, but if I'm him, I'm exploring the quarterback thing first. I can always go back to baseball.
Mm-hmm.
I'm playing football. If I'm him, I'm playing football because I didn't know. I hadn't seen him play much on the football. Is he like a gimmick quarterback that right. You saw him in like little brief instances last year with Mayfield? You're like, ah, that offensive line is really good. Mm-hmm. He's good.
Yeah.
And in an NFL that you can open some things up now, I think he can be really effective.
A year ago, I may have been fighting you harder on this. But now,
I feel like all doors are open all of a sudden.
Everything's open, man.
Everybody's allowing it to happen.
Yep.
I think the NFL's allowing themselves to do it.
The NFL realized they're missing out on a lot of great athletes because they're worried about height, size, and hand size instead of whether or not a guy can play.
Yeah. Lamar Jackson, who signed this year, right?
Mm-hmm.
His signing bonus, over $5 million.
Yeah.
He was the 32nd pick of the draft.
There you go.
So he can be a first-round pick.
And make more money than he got with baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if you're looking at just dollars, you can do that in year one.
Yeah.
In football, too.
But
and have a better chance. And have a better chance to play right away at the highest level.
If you're the Oakland A's right now and this guy ends up not coming to play for you and that's a top 10 pick, what a bust. Largest bust in the history of sports because the guy decided, I'm not going.
Are there legalities to that too?
I don't know. You're gonna have to pay that money back. Someone gotta pay that money back.
Well, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I think.
I would
sue his ass.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Are there some legal? I mean, you would obviously lose the player, and you can't probably force him to do it. But, yeah, I don't know. I think Kyler Murray made the smart play before the season started, right?
Mm-hmm.
And committed to baseball. I'm gonna go. They're gonna let me play this football thing. Let's go see how it goes.
Yeah.
But the impact he's had, and he's good.
Mm-hmm.
I'd reconsider. I'm going to play football if I'm Kyler Murray. Boy. If only you had those options.
I'm worried about thawing out chicken breast for dinner.
Yeah, in everyday life. We'll consider our options. Yikes. Coming up, baseball allowed something, meanwhile, to happen yesterday that could spell the end of the sport. Other leagues have stepped in. Maybe baseball should have. Next.
Fesco in the morning.
Kathy on the Protein House Ski with a Purpose text line points out an interesting question. Is Murray a hot lava of talent? I don't know. We need more Boris-isms on Kyler Murray. Maybe heading into the Heisman Trophy presentation on Saturday. So, yeah, somebody find Boris. Have him stand in front of a bunch of reporters, recorders, and gush about Kyler Murray, please.
This volcano of hot talent lava.
It's the most sexual I've ever heard baseball talked about.
Yeah. It's a volcano of hot talent lava.
You must not have been here in 14 and 15.
Lava.
Magma.
People pointing out Russell Wilson.
He goes to spring training.
Yeah, he's not a real two sports star as a quarterback.
I mean,
he had an at bat for
the Yankees this last year. It was pretty good.
He did. Yeah, he goes for spring training for like 2 weeks.
He's like a glorified Garth Brooks.
That's exactly what it is.
He beat me to it. So he did what Garth Brooks did. Tongue in cheek.
Better player, Russell Wilson, Garth Brooks. Speaking of a baseball. Tusco, you think that something that happened yesterday in baseball is not really good for the sport?
Yeah, Paul Goldschmidt being traded to the Cardinals. I don't think it's good. It has nothing to do with the St. Louis, you know, hatred or anything like that. It's the strong getting stronger in baseball. Meanwhile, the weak continue to get weaker in baseball. And I think if you look at it this way, and you're a college sports fan, so you'll understand this probably better than even Ryan and I put together on this one, though. When I look at baseball, I look at it kind of like I do with college sports. You've got your group of five, you know, the Big 12, the SEC, and all that kind of stuff. And then you have, you know, everybody else, like the leagues at the MAC, whatever they call that, the not group of five, right, in college football and college athletics. And I think the St. Louis Cardinals, the Yankees, the Red Sox, you know, the Dodgers, the Cubs, you know, all those teams, they kind of fall into that group of five. They're kind of always over here. They're always going to be good. They're always going to have high payrolls. They're always going to be a competitive team, always going to be a competitive organization, because that's the way baseball is set up right now. When you've got teams like the D-backs and the Royals, we're in the MAC, man. We're fighting for our lives. And teams in the MAC, like 99% of the time, aren't going to get that shot to compete with the teams in the group of five. And baseball is headed that way. Like we're looking at it right now, the Diamondbacks, the Royals, we're UCF. No matter what we do, it almost doesn't seem like we're going to get a fair shake at it. But if you're in that group of five, you're always going to find ways to get stronger. You're always going to find ways to get better. And you're always going to find ways to compete for championships. And every once in a while, a team like the Royals will sneak in there and have an opportunity to compete and win a world championship. But it's not going to happen all the time. And I was looking at Facebook yesterday, and obviously I've got a lot of friends on Facebook from St. Louis. I've got some from Phoenix as well. Diamondback fans were livid, upset, just terribly distraught by the trade. And Cardinal fans obviously were very, very happy and excited about this trade. But it's the rich just getting richer. And you're essentially, what you're doing is you're asking teams like the Royals and the Diamondbacks to say, the only way that you can really have a competitive advantage in baseball the way it's set up right now is to work three times harder, develop 17 different minor league teams, and hope those guys hit at the big league level all at the same time, like the Royals were able to do. And that's why I think when you look back at that championship in 15 and the American League championship in 14, you can't take that for granted because of how hard it is for a team like the Royals to win in baseball based on the way that the rules are set up. And we saw it yesterday. We really did see it yesterday where another group of five, if you will, got better and a MAC type team got worse. And there's really nothing truly that we can do about this. So I came up with kind of a solution. Baseball just needs to go with a salary cap and a salary floor. And I know people are going to be mad and baseball lifers aren't going to like the fact that I'm suggesting that. But I'm willing to have a work stoppage in baseball again to make the sport equitable. The potential of MLB owning the regional sports networks like came out earlier in the week is a really cool start. And I'll be excited if that becomes a reality. But if baseball doesn't fix this, where the group of five is going to have this great advantage and everybody else in the MAC is going to have a disadvantage, it's going to further drive fans away. Because if you're a Royals fan today, you're looking at that trade, you're going, well, we couldn't even have competed for that type of move. You know, we couldn't even have competed to bring Paul Goldschmidt in to Kansas City. We have to rely on doing it the hard way, and some baseball lifers will go, yeah, but that's all about the hard work, and that's why it's more rewarding. But from a fan base perspective, and you got to entice the fans, you got to do something to keep your fans excited and interested. And baseball right now, for most markets, doesn't lend itself to pull off a deal like was done yesterday would by
you,
St. Louis.
Would you like it to be a little bit like, say, the NBA blocking the Chris Paul trade?
Maybe.
Like that, those types of things.
I don't even want the league to block it. I just want everybody better on the same playing field, like the NFL is, where Green Bay can compete with New York.
But it'd be better. They did it for the betterment of the league, in their opinion.
I guess they kind of.
So like the league could step in and go, come on, Paul Goldschmidt, you gotta stay in Arizona. You gotta do this. We gotta make it palatable for you guys to be able to do this thing and not move them on to somebody else.
And you're moving them on. You're getting a boatload of prospects and guys in return and a compensatory pick and all that. But when the Cardinals, they're like the Yankees. When they trade minor league guys, Josh, that's it. They're done. You know, they know what guys to trade and what guys not to trade in that Cardinals system. So just because you got four prospects back and a compensatory pick, I don't think it's that great a deal. I think baseball needs to figure out a way, if they want to stay a relevant sport in this country, to make sure markets like Milwaukee and Kansas City and Cincinnati and Cleveland and all of these other kind of smaller markets, Minnesota and whatnot, small revenue market type teams, that they find a way to be able to have them competitive every year and not once every seventh year when the minor league system comes up and hits. That's the way baseball gets better, is to make everything equitable, and they've got to find a way to do that.
Nothing says Christmas quite like an ale. Well, a Christmas ale. We'll chat with Breckenridge Brewery on Beers of the Boys coming up next.
Fesco in the morning.
I'm a soul
man. Yeah, it is.
Live from Kansas City.
My father-in-law dances to every wedding to Soul Man. He's got the glasses, and he gets out there, and he dances. It's funny, my kids went over to my in-laws yesterday after school, and she took them kind of Christmas shopping, right? My in-laws! Yeah. And I said, did you see Papa? And my oldest daughter goes, for a little bit, shockingly, he was at the gym.
Wow.
They go with Papa for Grandpa?
Yeah, for Papa.
Or like, what do they go with Grandma?
Grandpam.
Grandpa and Papa.
And it's actually been simplified to just P.
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 So they call Grandma P.
P. They call her P.
Okay.
P and Papa.
Stuff's too long.
Yeah.
Kids even now.
I need a beer after that.
Yeah, that's right.
My parents are just Grandma and Grandpa. But
Beers of the Boys, powered by Standard Beverage and Breckenridge Brewery, joining us today. One of my favorite titles, we've talked to him before, is Todd Tebow. He is the culture czar with Breckenridge Brewery. Todd, I love that title.
Thanks, man. I'm not sure what it means sometimes, but sometimes think I'm the guy that manages all the geeks. But really, it's one of those things that basically live my world out on a bar stool.
Well, and that's the thing. Basically
culture
are
culture of yeast, yeah. Or I would say, yeah, just culture of
beer. Like, yeah. I thought you were just out there, you know, pressing the flesh and getting people to drink the beer. Basically, the social chairman for the brewery is what
pretty
really
much what
you
that
are.
Is.
Yeah.
That's what I do. I was one of our very first sales reps. I've been with the brewery for about 24 years now. So now I have the dubious honor of kind of being the face, or in this case, the voice of the brewery.
Well, and now you guys got the Christmas beers out, and we'll start with the Christmas ale.
Christmas
Josh,
is that ale what we've is got what here? I poured for us today.
And it smells really Christmassy, really good, really like Breckenridge-y. Tell us about the Christmas ale.
Yeah, the Christmas ale is actually one of our legendary beers, certainly one of our favorites here at the brewery that we bring out at Christmas time. It's not necessarily has to be a Christmas beer, quite honestly. But our brewers have kind of tripped it up a little bit with some hops, a little bit Chinook and Mount Hood hops, which kind of emulate a little bit of possible clove, pine, cinnamon, kind of all those Christmas-type flavors. So we don't put those flavors in the beer. It all comes from the hops, which is really kind of cool.
So you're saying this could be a year-round beer if people wanted to do that?
You bet.
Do you know people that do this year-round? Is it available year-round? That's the thing.
I do know that I do. One nice thing about that beer It comes in at about 7.1% alcohol.
Yes,
right,
sir.
Around there,
yeah.
Which is great. You know, it kind of holds up. It has some hop characteristic to it. Not overly hoppy, but enough hop characteristic to give the beer, you know, kind of preserve the beer a little bit. And I truly believe Christmas ale is almost better after it has about a year of age on it.
Really? That long, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, keep it in a nice dark ale. If you can keep it in your refrigerator, great. But maybe in the basement or a closet in the dark and in a cool area, and it'll save just as long as you want it.
Sadly, that's usually where I drink. Single dark closet.
Yeah.
By myself.
Yeah.
No.
Well, I'll meet you there. Around the holidays, hiding from everybody.
Keep it by that vanilla extract that you had since 1972
exactly.
In your pantry.
All these weird things that we pull out of our... The bottle as well, the decoration, I mean, that screams Breckenridge, Colorado. It's got the snow-top mountains and the Christmas with the snow on it. It feels like we're experiencing, well, a little bit of the weather here, but certainly the weather in Breckenridge, Colorado.
Yeah, I think if anybody's ever had been lucky enough to have the opportunity to not only come to Colorado, but specifically the town of Breckenridge, and once they turn all the lights on and the snow falls, and it's a beautiful, a lot of Victorian architecture. It's like Walt Disney created the most perfect Christmas mountain town.
Well, now you're making me very, very jealous right now as we drink the Christmas ale and think about Breckenridge and the beauty out there that it is. Now we've got the vanilla one as well, the vanilla
porter.
Vanilla porter,
yep.
Which
a classic.
Is another good kind of holiday type of beer.
You know, it certainly is a flavor of the holiday. However, the vanilla porter is a beer we produce year-round. Matter of fact, it's our number one selling beer now. It used to be for the longest time. The brew's been around almost 29 years now. And it was our Amber Ale Avalanche, and that's still a heavy hitter for us. But vanilla porter is that number one beer. And, you know, if you look at it, it has a deep, you know, if you hold it up to the light in the glass, it has a deep, dark, mahogany kind of color to it. But, shoot, it drinks pretty light. To me, it almost tastes like a cream soda.
It really does. And I'm finding that more and more as we go through, you know, different beers and whatnot with this segment, that every time somebody comes in with a porter, your initial reaction is that's going to be like a steak in my stomach and it's going to sit there. But it seems like they are very light. I don't want to go towards the crushable side of things, but to the point where they're just kind of very light and enjoyable, and it's not going to be one of those beers that's going to fill you up like a big piece of meat.
I totally agree. I mean, only the strong may be able to crush those things, but it's a nice dipping beer, but certainly... You know, I always say, especially with this particular beer, drink with your mouth and not with your eyes, because it's kind of, it'll deceive you a little bit.
Todd Tebow joins us from Breckenridge Brewery, who has the great title of a culture czar. What else is going on at the brewery these days?
Oh, with not only, like I said, the flavors of the season, the vanilla porter in Christmas, our guys are just crushing it. It's our busiest time of the year, actually. Typically, a brewery will kind of start to slow down in the fourth quarter. But we've got a lot of stuff going on, and certainly the snow is starting to fly. So it's time to wax skis and snowboards and get up on the hills and enjoy everything Colorado has to offer.
You mentioned that. I'm guessing for a Colorado-ish beer, the end of the year may be a little bit different than other breweries that maybe people be thinking more summertime. I'm guessing your brewery's probably... associate a little bit with more of the winter.
You know, it kind of can be, especially, with a beer called Avalanche. A lot of people think that's a seasonal beer, but again, that's an amber ale. But we come out of the gate with a lot of other things to balance everything out. We have a really nice agave wheat, which is an unfiltered wheat with a little agave nectar. There's one of those crushable beers right there. About 6 months ago, we came out with a brand new IPA called Hot Peak, we have kind of a different brewing process for it. The aroma on that thing and the hop characteristic on it is absolutely fantastic. The best IPA we've ever brewed.
All right, we're consuming the Christmas ale. How long is the Christmas ale available?
You know, that's kind of a tricky one. A Christmas ale, and one of the reasons why we're so busy is because of Christmas ale. And that beer almost becomes like about our fifth best-selling beer, and we only sell it 2 months out of the year. But it flies. It's legendary. It starts coming out about 1993, I think, is the first year we brewed that beer. It has a lot of followers. So I would definitely suggest it's on the streets right now. Get it, because a lot of times the liquor stores don't even have it up till about Christmas time. it's typical Christmas, December 26th, no one wants it. So it's good that it sells out before Christmas.
While supplies last, would be the classic line, right, Todd?
Exactly, yeah.
Todd Tebow of Breckenridge Brewery.
Sorry.
No, what were you going to say? Finish up, man.
Christmas ale, we grew 20% more of it this year for beer since 1993.
Wow.
It's still going gangbusters, and we can't do enough of it.
And available on both sides of the state line, both Kansas and Missouri.
Absolutely.
Todd, thanks for the time today. Enjoy the snow. Thanks for sending it here to Kansas City. It's snowing here today. We appreciate it.
Right on. Yeah, the season has started out great. Hopefully get soon, guys.
Talk to you soon.
Thanks. That's Todd Tebow, the Culture Czar at Breckenridge Brewery. And feels perfect for a day like today.
Really does.
Well.
Yeah, you're looking outside. It's supposed to be sunny later on today. I don't know. We'll figure it out.
These couple of beers. One of my favorites is the Vanilla Porter.
It's good.
The Christmas Ale I had for the first time today. Really good stuff.
Like both of them.
So you get a sixer of that under the tree.
Yeah. You're very happy.
That's a good present. Just put a little bow. I mean, it's got all the colors already. Just put a little red bow on it. You're good to go. It's a present.
You know, some people.
What?
I kind of stuck my foot in my mouth during that segment. We're not going to lie. But some people on Twitter do it on a daily basis, right? You've seen that happen.
What did you say? What's the problem?
What did I say, Ryan? Eat up like a big piece of meat. did you see Ari Fleischer's tweet yesterday, the former, you know, presidential whatever?
No, I really only follow him one day of the year.
One day of the year on September 11th, right?
Yeah.
So yesterday at President Bush's funeral, Ari Fleischer tweets this. Sometimes you don't have to have a profound tweet. Sometimes you can just have a thought. You don't have to share it with everybody. Every vice president since 1977 is at President Bush's funeral except one. Mondale, Quayle, Gore, Cheney, Biden, and Pence are all there. The only one missing is President Reagan's VP, George
still
H.
with us?
Yeah, he is. The only one missing is President Reagan's VP, George H.W. Bush. No, he was there.
Wait a minute. What?
Yes.
The only vice president.
Yes, he did.
The only vice president not in attendance at George Bush's funeral
was George Bush.
Was George Bush.
Right. Was George Bush.
Of this tweet.
The comments on this tweet.
I wouldn't consider a jerk.
Yeah. I mean, the comments on this tweet are unbelievable.
Bob's response was, he was there.
Yeah, I mean, I go, well, he, you know.
That's that guy's moment of humility for the week.
Geez.
The friend of mine who sent it to me, I responded back to her. I said, define there. Because he was there. They were there for him. Like, Ari Fleischer, man, before you hit send, kind of read that out loud, think about that for a second, and go, you know what? This is probably not the best tweet to send out from a funeral.
You see that button right there? You know what I'm saying? Don't press send.
Was he, like, you think he was going to stir some political controversy with that?
I don't think he was trying to stir any kind of controversy. I think he was trying to make this profound statement or something like that he thought was this profound statement that ended up falling very flat. The only person not at the president's funeral today was the president.
Has he deleted the tweet?
I don't know. I don't think so. I just clicked on it and was reading some of the mentions. I mean, the mentions are just,
bro.
I mean, the mentions are just like, is this a joke? Are you serious about this? Was this something that you intended? I mean, like the mentions are just, or the comments are just unbelievable on this thing. The first one, he was there, promise. Weird, but okay. Is that supposed to be a joke? If so, it's not funny. Do better. Some more that I can't read. Somebody said, psst, look under the flag. Somebody said, seriously. I mean, yesterday, I don't know what you guys thought about the funeral. I watched a little bit of the funeral. Obviously watched George's speech about his dad.
Yeah, I didn't watch that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, if you didn't cry and get moved by that thing, unbelievable. I watched that yesterday, and my takeaway was it wasn't who was there or who wasn't there or who was doing what or who wasn't doing what. My takeaway from that thing was, America really, really, really is a great place. And look at all of these leaders that came together to honor one of the great men of our country. And America can get back to that, man. Like, I watched that yesterday. I went, the Bush family, the Bush dynasty, if you will, kind of represents everything that was great about America. You know, very classy. You know, you may not have agreed with all their politics, and that's fine. You don't have to agree with all the politics.
Strategery,
points of light, you know, all that kind of stuff. You may not agree with anything, you know, any of that kind of stuff.
But at the end of the day, you knew that they were that they were respected. They were well respected, and when they were running the country, America was a well respected country around the world. And I just watched that yesterday, and I realized how much dedication the Bush family gave to others and not just to themselves. And that's what I took away, you know, from that funeral yesterday. That speech by George W. Bush was just unbelievably moving. And, you know, when he cried, I think we all cried as a nation because of how special George H.W. Bush was to the United States and everything that he did and served and all of that kind of stuff. Just the jobs that he had before even vice president of the United States. The guy was truly an amazing man, and we lost a good one, and we're laying the rest today. And, you know, you just look at that and you go, man, that's what serving America is all about. Rising up and doing job after job after job after job after job to get to the point of the presidency. That was pretty cool yesterday.
Side note, I'm always really impressed whenever I watch like one of these televised funerals and I see people giving eulogies and they manage to keep it together. That was one of the things, like I wasn't taken aback or anything by the fact that he started, you know, to cry, because that's put myself in that situation. Well, that's sure. Where I'd be. Like, yeah. I remember my grandmother's funeral and I was that guy. I was like the guy that you're like, Jesus, dude, get it together.
Right.
Like, I just couldn't imagine having to be in that situation and also be on national television.
And that's what presidents do, though.
Yeah. I mean,
they're public speakers. So.
But there's a difference between being the president and having it your old man. And when he just patted that casket both times, walking up and walking back.
That's why I think he lost it at the end. I think he was a very presidential, like,
Trying to be stoic.
I got a speech, I'm going kind of thing. And then he became the son at the end of it.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He did become the son at the end. I thought he did a good job of mixing humorous stories and good stories. And, you know, it was a 12-minute speech, and he hit on everything that you want to hit on in that type of speech. Showed emotion, told great stories, made you laugh, made you cry, made you think, just like Jim Valvano said. And that's the kind of speech that I think he gave about his dad yesterday. It was really good.
It's like the most profound, somber Beers of the Boys ending we've ever had.
Yeah, well,
I mean, if we want to end on a little bit of a high note, the text line is asking if the vanilla porter is made with V-E.
V-I.
V-I. The vanilla extract. Fesco's household.
I haven't even cracked into that vanilla porter as I drop my can over the bottom over here.
We'll take care of that during the break. Also, Therese Paylor, Yahoo Sports, our 610 Sports Radio NFL insider, tells us, the Chiefs are going to miss Kareem Hunt. Hear from him next.
Going to fill you up like a big piece of meat.
Fesco in the morning.
The guy is drunk.
Tomorrow we'll share our favorite memories of our boss who is leaving at the end of the week. Steven Spector is taking over. I just thought of my favorite memory of our departing boss as I was in the bathroom.
Does it have to do with a crappy hotel he put you in?
No, it has to do with flushing the toilet. So that's a deep tease that you want to hear tomorrow, that Josh knows exactly what I'm talking about. John knows exactly what I'm talking about. It was one of the most unbelievable moments that you could ever share with somebody. And you'd look at them and go, why is this happening right now? So we'll do that tomorrow.
I'm intrigued.
Good news. Working with Bob.
What?
Bob wasn't staying in that crappy Fleabag motel.
No.
Bob's never doing that. Ever, ever, ever.
You mean so to tell me I got bed bug bites nothing?
I can let Bob fight those kind of fights. Yeah. I know he's going to. So we never had to stay in those rundown hotels that our boss championed.
I'm pretty sure when he books hotels for us, he just goes to Priceline, sorts by price, low to high.
Right.
And then gets like the second from the bottom.
Sure.
There was one time I will take credit for saving Vern. I think it was Vern was going to San Francisco.
Uh-huh. For the World Series.
For the Giants. Yes. And I walk into the boss's office, and our boss is notorious for saying, hey, man, I wouldn't book a hotel I wouldn't stay in.
Right, and he'll stay in anything.
And we were like, yeah, but you'll stay anywhere. That's not a good bar to have. And he's like, well, what do you think? And I went over, and I'm like, okay, find me the mid-range hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Not the most expensive, not the cheapest, the mid-range. Book it for Vern. Go. And he did.
And he did. Yeah, you did save him because like, Vern would have like, been at some place that like had blood stains on the door.
That was like the one time I saved Vern. I was like right, and it happened to be like right around the corner from the stadium.
Mm-hmm. Does Vern know you saved his bacon on that one? Probably not. He doesn't care.
It didn't really matter, but it was just like one of those times like, I'm just going to do a solid.
Probably yeah, doesn't like, care.
Probably, no, he doesn't. What does Vern
like,
care?
Vern's being sent all by himself to San Francisco on short notice.
So hard.
It's terrible. We're going
to
put him up in a terrible part of town, and he might not make it to the stadium.
You're staying in terrible. Oakland.
That's not a way to do it.
Vern came here from Detroit. He's fine.
That's not the way to do it. This is the segment after Beers with the Boys, powered by Standard Beverage. Always an adventure.
Yes, it is.
But we had a chance to catch up with Therese Paylor of Yahoo Sports, our 610 Sports Radio NFL insider, earlier in the show today, joins us Thursdays at 8:30. But we'd been asking the question, like, the impact of losing Kareem Hunt. It's the right decision. He's gone.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Had to happen.
Right.
And I don't want to be like putting my fingers in mirrors. Everything will be just fine. But I think it will. I think running back position, you make do.
Right.
James Conner filled in for Le'Veon Bell just fine. Spencer Ware, Chikandra West filled in previously for Jamal Charles. Combined to be just fine.
Mm-hmm.
I think they'll figure it out. Therese Paylor, though, does say there are some challenges to losing Kareem Hunt.
There are some problems with losing Kareem Hunt. You guys know it. I always tell it to you straight. You know, I'm not going to blow it up. You know, I'm not going to just lie to you. I don't do that. There's some problems with losing Kareem Hunt, and I'm going to tell them to you. He's an elite player as far as, like, making defenders miss. That's the number one trait that you look for in a running back, okay? Even after missing this game on Sunday, he was still third in the league in missed tackles. So, like, that matters. That gives your offense an explosive element, especially on the goal line or downfield. He's the only running back on the roster that was equally as effective on the 30-yard line and the goal line. Do you get what I'm saying?
Sure.
So, and he was really good as a runner and receiver. So, like, now to kind of get all that, you're going to have to mix and match different backs. So there's that problem. Also, there's this. The Raiders were able to focus a lot of resources on Tyreek Hill, and they let Kelce kind of do what he wanted, right? But, like, you know, if you don't have to worry about the running game as much, which they don't, because Spencer Ware is not, like, as explosive as Kareem Hunt, you know, you're going to have a chance to take away Ty now, which means that you need Watkins and Kelce to be on point along with Mahomes. Mm-hmm. So, at the end of the day, this isn't going to kill the Chiefs like it would kill other teams, but we can't just act like you can just take, you know, Emmitt Smith from the early 2000s or early 90s Cowboys, and they would have been okay. Like, they're going to be fine, but, like, they're not going to be as elite or as explosive as they were. The good news is that what they still are probably is going to be good enough, but Patrick's going to have to carry that extra load.
Very honest assessment.
Mm-hmm.
Kareem Hunt is different. That's why he's a starter. I mean,
right.
If he was just a guy, he wouldn't be the starter. So there are some dynamics that they can't necessarily replicate. What I think the combination of having Andy Reid, again, factors into this thing.
Sure it does.
Having that stud head coach.
Yeah, and stud quarterback.
And stud offensive mind.
I think your loss of him last year is a lot more detrimental than it is this year.
Yeah. You know what Andy does? He goes to the grease board and starts drawing up stuff.
Right.
Beautiful minds the hell out of this thing, and it's all right.
And he's going to be just
fine.
It's
going to be different, but they'll make do, and they'll figure out a way to – they won't – and it's good, too. They're not going to be as predictable down the stretch.
Maybe so.
Gives you another option. So I like the combination of Andy Reid's offensive mind, Patrick Mahomes being able to take over, and – the running back position as a whole.
Yeah, I think we have a different head coach. If Todd Haley was here, I'm panicking right now. But Andy Reid's here. Maybe I'm too blindly loyal and faithful in what Andy Reid can do, but the guy wins.
Brian Billick coming up at, I want to say, 11:30. Is that right? 11:30 for Billick. Show and Vern come your way next here on 610 Sports Radio.
Going to fill you up like a big piece of meat.